Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the greatest baseball podcast to grace your ears. I'm today's host, Matthias Altman Kurosaki, and with me, as always, we have my amazing co-hosts, Alex Clark and Ryan Splashpots. Gentlemen, first things first, as we begin every show, how are we doing on this fine Monday evening?
It has been pouring rain here in Seattle, and guess what? On top of you know, it's also been raining. What's also been raining right now is the entire baseball world on my parade, as Seattle has not done well since our last podcast. We are already into the 10-game miracle stretch that we've been talking about, and so far, in the first three games, Seattle has gone 0-3 and are currently, at the time of this recording, losing to the Astros. So you can tell where my mental state's at.
Hello, friends. I made some real adult purchases the other day. I got 5 new baseball hats, a 95 World Series pin, and a Ravens pin. So I'm adulting like a champion here. Too bad my sports teams are not playing like champions at the moment, outside of Charlie Culberson in AAA as a reliever.
You know, the only... Actually, that's a lie. The Steelers won yesterday. But really, the Syracuse Orange are what's keeping my... from a sports perspective, keeping my I'm struggling for words here, but it's helping me keep afloat. I'll say that much. The Syracuse Orange are 4-0 right now, and we're hosting Clemson this weekend, so that's going to be exciting at the JMA Wireless Dome. Wow, that's weird to say. That's still weird to say to me. It will always be just the dome in my head. But anyways. Alex, you alluded to it. This AL West race has taken a turn, to say the least. You have the Rangers coming out on top with a 3-game sweep in Arlington over the weekend. And then you have the Astros facing the Royals for the second straight weekend and getting swept at home, which, by the way, the Astros finished the year 39-42 at home. I just want to point that out. So, Alex, I know you're the Mariners guy here, so let's go to you first. I mean, is there any bright side to this? I mean, I'm not really sure.
The bright side to everything when it comes to Seattle, at the very least, is what you alluded to right there with the Astros, is that even with the Mariners losing, they still have a shot because the Astros have also been losing. So, I don't get it. Like, we were talking about how strong, not too long ago, how strong these three teams were in the AL West and how incredible this fight was going to be coming down the stretch. For the last several games, it has looked more like a toilet bowl than a Super Bowl. And I hate seeing that. Seattle played well below their potential every game against Texas. And then you have the Kansas City Royals playing amazing baseball against the Astros? Like, that just sounds weird.
They won five of six games against the Astros.
Like, how does that happen? Like, how do you let this happen? Don't get me wrong. I am basically saying thank you to every single Orioles fan and, I'll tell you afterwards, then Royals fan. Actually, there was a really funny post I saw from Zach Left on Twitter when Cedric Mullins hit his three-run cover behind go-ahead home run. Like I said, it's a good time. He's a good follow, by the way. But anyway, like, I don't know what I'm watching here. I really don't. This has been some of the most weird and unsatisfactory baseball I've seen in a bit. Because every single game that Seattle had against Texas, right, they were all good games that came down to the very end where one at-bat would have changed the complete outcome on it. And all of them came down to basically the top of the 10th inning, bottom of the 10th inning. Anyway, yeah, so that kind of stuff. Ninth inning, that's what I'm talking about here. But, and then you just couldn't get it done either time. And then you have the Astros on this end, who I think they went into this series completely asleep. They thought, this is one of the worst teams in baseball. Let's take a rest and go from there. And then they took the foot off the gas, and the Royals said, gas, 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 let's go. And they took advantage. And you know what? Thank you to them. The real winners here, though, have been the Rangers. The Rangers, we were talking about a little bit ago with that they were fakers. They were pretenders for most of the season at that point, because then they just completely fell out of first place in the AL West. And guess where they're back to right now again? Give you a hint. It is back to first place in the AL West. Like, right now, you take a look at the standings, and a little bit ago, every team was within half a game of each other. Every team was within half a game of each other, and now Texas leads Houston by 2.5 games and leads Seattle by 3. With a good few, like, still a good few games left to play. But if Houston wins tonight's game against Seattle, which it's looking like it's going to at this point, especially after a Kyle Tucker solo shot, it's looking less and less likely that anything's going to happen at this point. And you know what? I know it's one game. But when you had Luis Castillo, your ace, your number one guy going up against Justin Verlander, who, don't get me wrong, is still a very, very good pitcher, but you can't do anything against that, and then your ace gets lit up, there's some worry signs there. This is going to be really interesting coming down to the final 5-6 games, but there's a little bit of worry in the area in the Pacific Northwest.
Imagine if you told someone at the beginning of July that Cole Reagans would be the critical piece in determining the AL wildcard race. He'd just been traded to Kansas City from Texas. Texas gets Roldis Chapman. That hasn't worked exactly to plan. But what has worked to plan? Cole Reagans is turning the Houston Astros into potatoes. He's started against them his last two outings. The Royals have won both of them. And the start before that, Reagans pitched well against Toronto. They did lose that game. But I think the Rangers executed a bit of 17D chess here by trading a pitching prospect to blow up the seasons from their rivals. But jokes aside, this is not exactly how you want to enter the playoffs. I'm sure we can get conflicting data in the past of how teams enter the playoffs and if that leads to a lot of wins or a lot of losses. But if you're Houston, if you're Seattle, just a couple days ago, you had great chances to make the playoffs. And now you are in a situation that you essentially have to win this series. One of them will obviously win the series. The other will not win the series. Winner of the series will be the favorite to get that final wild card spot in the American League. Toronto doesn't have to play in these two against these two teams. Texas is getting the Angels right now. They are losing at the moment, but there's a real situation that this is a 2-1 series either way. And both teams kind of screw themselves over. Texas walks past, Toronto walks past, and you're going to have essentially a game 163 that just happens to take place Wednesday, September 27th between Houston and Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing is, like Alex was saying, all three of those games in Texas this weekend were, I mean, they were close games, really. I mean, here's the thing with the Mariners, and yes, I understand they got shut out in game two of that series, but I don't doubt their offense, really. But what's concerning to me is that in those three games, they led for exactly half an inning. You can't win falling behind into a hole every single game. And this once really reliable pitching staff has just not been reliable this month. And we saw this, I mean, unfortunately, I saw the signs kind of dating back to that first series in September against the Mets. I mean, you go into a series, Logan Gilbert gave a great effort, but I remember this is a depleted Mets lineup that lit up Luis Castillo and George Kirby. And then, you know, Kirby struggled again and again. And really, he hasn't been the same this month. And Castillo's been inconsistent too. I mean, he's had too many starts where I feel like he just hasn't had his A game. And then you never know what you're going to get out of Brian Wu or Bryce Miller. Gilbert, I feel like, has been the rock of the rotation this month. But I mean, between that, you know, when you can't get length out of your starting pitchers, it puts a lot of pressure on your bullpen, and then the bullpen gets overused. And then you have to try to lengthen your starters out too much, and then they tire out. It's just it's a mess right now. I really think their offense has put up plenty of fight. I understand maybe they're not putting up much of a fight tonight, but you know, that's the thing though, is you're seeing the same issue tonight. They fall into a hole, then they have to try to fight from behind. So it's kind of a mess. I'll be completely honest. The only way I see the Rangers messing this up is if they somehow lose this series to the Angels, or they somehow get swept by the Angels, which I don't see happening. I understand they're losing right now. The chance of that happening, not very high. That being said, I was telling these guys before this show, I understand this was about over a decade ago, but we've seen this movie before. I remember in 2012 when the Rangers had a 5-game lead with 9 games to go against with a 5-game lead over the A's, and they've ended their season with 3 games at the Oakland Coliseum and got swept in them, and the A's won the division. So I'm not saying it's impossible for the Mariners to, you know, knock the Rangers out of the playoffs, but it seems rather unlikely, and they're going to have to take care of business against the Astros if they want a prayer at that, really. Also worth noting is that the Mariners do have the tiebreaker over every team other than the Rangers in this race. They have the tiebreaker over Toronto. They have the tiebreaker over Houston. They also went 12-1 against Oakland, by the way. So they've won the season series against every AL West opponent other than Texas, which they're 1-8 against. So, fellas, with these three teams battling it out over this last week, tell me, what do you think happens? Did Seattle miraculously make the playoffs again?
I think that if Seattle makes the playoffs, they're going to be limping to the playoffs. It's going to come off of some very hard fought wins where it's going to be a couple comfort behinds, if anything, but it's going to be during that Texas series. Like, that's really where things are going to come down to for Seattle. I think you have to capitalize here against the Astros to have a good chance at it. But playing against the Rangers is going to be it's going to have to be their opus. If they don't pull out something big there, it is going to be very, very hard. Because right now, you got to give the advantage here to the Astros and to the Rangers. They have those games from winning. You have the Rangers that somehow just have Seattle's number, which doesn't give a whole lot of confidence to Seattle. Especially considering that, like you said there, Mac, their pitching staff has been depleted. It feels like their pitching has almost been pitching they've been pitching like a team that has been playing all season long. They have been playing a very, very depleted, very drained style as of late. And it's worrisome. It is extremely worrisome for, you know, not just for the team, but for the Mariners' sake. And, I mean, I kind of want to go on my soapbox for a second, but I'll leave that for maybe a little bit later here. But the thing that I don't understand when it comes right now to the Mariners' style at this point, and this is honestly what I think could really screw them over here, is that Scott Servais is managing the lineup the way he should be managing the pitching, and is managing the pitching the same way he should be managing the lineup right now. Because right now, Servais is bringing in guys as pinch hitters, pinch runners, as early as the 5th or 6th inning. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you're putting out your best guys and you're subbing them out this early, that spells panic. That spells that you are trying to gain every little advantage while not seeing what those obvious risks are. Because right now, they've created a lot of risks. There was a game, the last game in Texas. They subbed in Haggerty in the 6th inning. And I'm like, okay, that's a little early, but, you know, I guess I get it. Haggerty's been hot as of late. And, you know, he came through big. Came through with a big triple down the third base line. And I'm like, cool, all right, good move. And then his next at-bat, they sub him out again. I'm like, wait. This guy just came through as one of the biggest hits of the game, has been playing decent defense, and you're subbing him out again just to get another lefty-righty matchup, even with Sammy being a switch hitter. Whereas the pitching staff, he is keeping in his starting pitchers really long, like a lot longer than I think really should be at this point. Like, you have a bullpen that, as long as you manage them decently well, then okay, you've got a decent chance here. Like, you can manage them and you can let them at least have their rest as they need to. But you're keeping in guys like Castillo, like Kirby, who are really having a bit of trouble down the stretch here as we're now way past the dog days. And now you're starting to see some of the repercussions of it. Service has a lot of times, that, and I'll be one of the people that said it's worked well, is one of the pioneers of really trying to take every single analytical approach, but in kind of the wrong ways a little bit. There's a meme that was going around for a while where it was basically saying, okay, lol, time for Seawald to pitch. And honestly, it worked out really well. Like, all right, cool. You know what? It's fine. You don't need to always worry about the ex-WOBA or need to worry about spin rate on everything. And just go with the guy that works well, that does well. And yet with the hitting stats, he seems to be going to exactly that direction. And that worries me a lot. Especially when you're taking out guys like Eugenio Suarez in the 7th or 8th inning when they've been your only offensive and defensive production. Like, sorry I went on the soapbox anyway. I said I wouldn't, but yeah, I apologize for that. This, I love this team so much. I love a lot of these guys, these players so much. But when you are having these kind of problems and you see they're as blatantly easy to see, you have to do something about it. And I know you're at the very end of the season, but you know what? Play your guys. Let the guys that got you here, let them carry you that way. And the pitch, and on the pitching sake of things, if you hear that your pitchers need a second or they need, you know, to come out a little bit early because you just see that they just don't have it, then do that. Don't leave George Kirby in for a 7th inning where he's going to give up when he basically went outright and said, I don't have it today. I don't have it. And then you let him take the blame on it. And then the entire media goes after him for it as well.
You know, I have been a little bit lower on the Mariners than both of you guys. And right now they're staring down the shotgun, right. And yes, this comes with the benefit of you're playing the teams ahead of you. So if you take care of business, it doesn't matter, right? But do we trust Seattle to beat Texas? Do we trust Seattle to beat Houston? You know, Houston has been in this situation before. They have been in tight games in September and October, November. They've won consistently. There's a reason they have 2 World Series rings and a couple other World Series appearances. So I trust Houston to take at least 2 out of 3 in this series. And then looking at Texas and Seattle, assuming, I'll be the first to admit, assuming might not be the right thing to do with this AL West race, but assuming Texas doesn't get swept by the Angels, big assumptions, I know. If Houston takes 2 out of 3 against Seattle, Seattle needs a sweep to pass Texas, and they'd need Houston to drop games in their final series. So as it stands, I think Seattle's the odd man out.
Yeah, I will say that, like you said, Splash, I mean, you do not know what to expect here, because let's just take a quick look back. Remember, the Astros swept the Mariners in Texas. And then the Rangers swept the Blue Jays in a 4-game series in Toronto. So you're thinking Toronto is dead in the water. There's no way, right? There's no way they come back from it. Oh, my God. They fired off a hot stretch. They're probably the surest thing to make the playoffs now. So I'll say this much. And I think the Rangers' offense is legit. Like, they have scored the most runs in the American League. They're averaging close to well over 5 runs a game, close to 6 runs per game. Their pitching staff is a little suspect, especially their bullpen. I mean, like I said, there's a reason why those games against the Mariners got close, is because the bullpen got pretty shaky. So I'll ask you guys one more question on this topic, which is, looking at these 3 teams, which team do you think can make the most noise in the playoffs?
I do want to say, though, and that is that one of those games against the Rangers for Seattle and the Rangers came down to one call that if it had gone the other way, and it wasn't an umpire call, it was a third base coach's call that he had made. of a ground ball right up the middle, a shallow ground ball, by the way, that got into the shallow center field, sending Kelnick, who had just passed third by the time that Adolis Garcia had the ball in his hands and sent him home. Kelnick was out by not just a mile, but 3 miles.
It's also that Garcia has a cannon of an arm. Exactly. So I don't know what you're doing.
Exactly. I saw that. I'm like, wait, why are you waving him? Why are you waving him? He is out by everywhere. Like, I hate talking bad against this team, but come on, man. Anyway.
That's why Ronald Acuna is the MVP. He would have scored.
Incorrect. Anyway, nice effort. Okay. Nice effort. Good job. Also, Mookie Betts MVP. Anyway, so, no, I'm kidding. But, okay, back to your question of which of the teams in the AL West can make the most noise.
Yes, correct.
All right, so I'm going to give you two different answers here. First of which is the Rangers. I think the Rangers' offense has been incredible to watch. They have played some amazing baseball, and offense a lot of times will do that, especially in the playoffs. That's really what it comes down to half the time. But I'm going to say this right now and call me homer, but I'll explain it why. If the Mariners make the postseason, they're going to make a lot of noise. The reason why, their pitching staff is built for the playoffs. Their pitching staff, if you have a 3-game series and you send out Castillo, Kirby, Gilbert, like, that's strong. And then you have a fourth, and then you have a few different guys that you can rotate in between, say, Bryce Miller and Brian Wu, then, cool, you have an uber-powerful lineup that you can, pitching staff that you can work with, and then let your timely hitting come from there. So, at that point right now, I think that if Seattle makes it, they're a team that's really well built for the playoffs. It's just about whether or not they're going to actually make it.
Alex, there were 3 options and somehow you chose the 2 wrong ones.
Wrong is a subjective term, especially when you're wrong about 95% of the time.
One of these teams has won multiple World Series and has guys that have been there, done that several times. The other two teams do not. And yes, you make a great point about the Rangers offense. Yes, you make a great point about the Mariners pitching staff. This Astros team kind of does both, and that's what wins in the playoffs. You need timely hitting and timely pitching. Yes, the Mariners have a great staff. Look at Milwaukee in the National League as a comparison. The Rangers have a great offense. Look at the Dodgers in the National League. Both the Dodgers and Brewers have flaws. The Dodgers don't have great pitching. The Brewers don't have a great lineup. You know who has both? The Houston Astros. They've had it all year. It's like this sleeper cell. They have good players at every position. You have MVP caliber pieces in Yordan and Tucker and Altuve. You have 2 ace-level pitchers. And your bullpen generally is very good. So to me, Houston for the entire season has checked off all the boxes. It's just a matter of when will we see the real Astros? And today, next week, into October, that's when you see the real Astros. And that's why I think they are as legitimate of any team in the American League to win the World Series.
Yeah, I'm going to second Splash's take here. And really, I think it comes down to kind of what he said. They're battle tested. They've been there so many times. I mean, you go back to 2015. You remember how they were so awful from 2010 to 2014 with 100 lost seasons or not winning more than 70 games during that time. Since 2015, they've missed the playoffs a total of 1 time. I mean, getting Justin Verlander back, I think, was really a huge move for them. Getting Kendall Graveman back, too. I mean, Verlander has been to the playoffs so many times in his career and now has 2 World Series rings. I think the Astros kind of do put it all together. If I'm looking at the most well-rounded of these 3 teams, I think it's Houston. I think Texas has the best offense. I think Seattle has the best pitching. You put those 2 together, though, I mean, yes, the Rangers and Astros are kind of middle of the pack in terms of ERA, but I think the Astros, when they're firing on all cylinders, they're the best team in the American League, arguably the best team in baseball. So I think the Astros have the potential to win another ring this year. And I think just because of their experience, I fully expect them, if they do make the playoffs, to make it back to the World Series. So anyways, We're going to move on from the AL West, which, by the way, the Astros finish up their season with three games in Phoenix against the Arizona Diamondbacks, who we are going to get to right now. The National League wild card race is bonkers. Let's just put it that way. The D-backs lost this afternoon to the Yankees, which means there's basically three teams fighting for two spots. Yes, the Reds are technically in the race. They're 2.5 games back. The Phillies haven't technically clinched, but they have a magic number of one. So they're basically a sure thing to make the playoffs. But we have the D-backs, the Cubs, and the Marlins fighting for the final two spots. The D-backs and Cubs are tied. The Marlins are a game back. Gentlemen, three teams fighting for two spots. Give me your outlook on this situation. I'll go to Splash here first for this.
So I think it comes down to Arizona and Chicago. Miami, while valiant, while they've been scoring runs a little bit more regularly than they had been, shout out to the Miami Dolphins for kicking the Marlins into high gear, by the way. It's Arizona and Chicago's spot to lose. And, you know, Chicago does have some tough games that coming up. I know they have a trip down to Atlanta, but Atlanta's been playing this, like, C-tier lineup the last couple days, other than Matt Olson, it feels like. They're starting random guys up from Gwinnett. So, you know, I think Chicago can take advantage of that, take two out of three, and then close the season out strong, I believe, in Milwaukee. And Arizona, I think you have the advantage over Miami, and I think they will keep it that way. And those are the two teams I kind of want to see, with all due respect to the Marlins. You have the two aces in Arizona with Gallen and Merrill Kelly. Chicago, you have all the timely hitting. You have a guy that's going to probably finish second in Cy Young and Justin Steele. You have a really good bullpen with Alzolay at the end. I think both of those teams are, you know, exciting teams, while Miami is kind of the 2022 Minnesota Vikings with all the close wins, and they're a mid team, but they win a bunch of, you know, they're going to finish with an above 500 record. Even if you look at their, you look at the roster and you look at the results themselves, and they're more of a, you know, a 78 win team as opposed to what could be an 82, 83, 84, 85 win team.
I mean, yeah, at this point right now, what I mostly see when I'm looking at this is that Phillies already have the first point locked down. Like, I don't see there being really any chance that they miss out. They're going to be the first seed of the first wild card, excuse me, not first seed. And then, like I said, it comes down to the Diamondbacks Cubs. I'm with you on this one, Splash. I think that it's just going to be the Diamondbacks and is going to be the Cubs. For the reasons that we've already kind of said, it's a little sad that Cincinnati kind of got knocked out of this, especially with how big of a rush they had earlier this year, and how they could be one of the most exciting teams in baseball, which, I mean, they are. They still are a very exciting team to watch, and they are a full year ahead of schedule. But so expect them to make big noise next year. This year, however, right now, I like the pitching rotation for Arizona. I like the hitting, like you said, for the Cubs. I think that having Justin Steele's really helped solidify that entire rotation, and it's going to make it a lot more interesting in the playoffs, considering how good he has been. And then you have Arizona, who, again, you said Gallen, Kelly, you've said the main guys for the starting rotation side of things. They also still have my homeboy, Paul Sewald, who is going to do amazing good work over there. And then you've also still got, some really fast kid from Washington. What was his name again? Yeah, it's just some really fast, very good guy. Didn't he make the All-Star team this? Yeah, you guys know exactly who I'm talking about at this point. So I like both of those teams, and honestly, it still could go either way about which one's going to have the number two and the number two wild card, number three wild card. And I think whoever gets that, it's the problem is, though, is that it doesn't feel like it's going to matter too much. It really isn't, because right now, the number one seed is Atlanta, right? Number two seed are the Dodgers. Number three seed are the Brewers. And right now, you have Brewers and the Philadelphia Phillies going. Is that's what's basically set in stone. Are basically set in stone at this point. And then, let's see here. Actually, no, excuse me. My apologies. I'm misreading this a little bit. You're going to have, if they stand the way that they are right now, you're going to have the Cubs taking on the Brewers, and you're going to have the Phillies taking on the Diamondbacks, and I don't feel like it matters much. I feel like at that point, the higher seeds are just going to win out from right there, where the Brewers are going to take care of the Cubs or the Diamondbacks, and the Phillies will dispense who they take on against. Because the Phillies right now are probably the biggest wild card just in general of the postseason, just like they were last year. They're going to make a lot of noise, and it's really just a matter of, are they going to do the same kind of noise they did in 2022? Or are the Braves or Dodgers going to make sure they don't reach the highest peak?
So I do want to point out that the schedule factor here, which is that the Cubs finish up with 3 in Atlanta and 3 in Milwaukee. The Diamondbacks, who just finished up their series in New York, which, by the way, they lost 2-3 in that series. They finish up with 3 against the White Sox and then 3 at home against the Astros. So that's, I mean, the D-backs in some way do play a factor into that AL wild card race because they will not be taking the foot off their gas pedal. Unlike the Braves might be taking, are actually almost certainly taking the foot off their gas pedal right now with having pretty much locked up home field advantage throughout the National League side of things, at least. And then the Marlins, here's the thing with the Marlins, is they finish up with 3 games against the Mets at Citi Field, which, by the way, I'm going Thursday night, and then 3 games against the Pirates. And on one hand, you can think, all right, those are two teams that, you know, it's whatever. They're going to, you know, two easy opponents. But the Marlins are only 3-7 against the Mets this year. I don't know what it is. The Mets have handled them pretty easily. They, you know, they faced each other 7 times in the first 10 games of the season. Mets won 5 of those 7. Mets just took 2 of 3 from them in Miami last week. You know, and then the Pirates have been playing some inspired baseball. You know, you see them come back from 9-0 the other day against the Reds. They took 2 of 3 from the Cubs, which, by the way, the Cubs, I mean, they kind of have been inconsistent this month, to say the least. I remember when they swept the Giants, it was like, all right, the Cubs, maybe they'll make a push in the NL Central. And then they lose 6 of 7 to the D-backs. They lose a series to the Rockies. They lose a series to the Pirates. But then they sweep the Rockies. It's like, all right, which version of the Cubs are we going to get? So I think it does come down to Arizona and Chicago. And I will say this, that the Cubs are 5-5 against the Brewers. They've played them well, really. So, I mean, Cubs-Brewers, it's an interesting matchup. It's a huge rivalry. I mean, it feels like Miller Park is basically Wrigley Field South. Or sorry, did I just call it Miller Park? American Family Field. So I feel like a Cubs-Brewers playoff series would be super intense. But that leads me to the next question because, and by the way, the Reds technically are still alive, but it would take a miracle for them to get in. There is a chance where they all finish at 84-78. Very unlikely. But same question I asked in the American League, except I think we've all established the Phillies have the potential to do some damage, let's say, in the playoffs. Again, they're a better team than they were last year when they made the World Series. So of these last 3 teams, the Cubs, D-backs, and Marlins, of those teams, who do you think has the best shot of maybe surprising some people in the playoffs?
I'm going to say I think the Cubs have the best chance. I think that when you get to the playoffs, an amazing hitting is going to take you a long way. And if you have a good few pitchers that you can really rely on, that's a key formula for success in the playoffs. And I think right now, especially when you have, like you said, timely hitting is something that is so important, especially when you have a few spark plugs on the team like Cody Bellinger that could really get a rally going or could really get a stadium going. Honestly, of those teams, I really do think that the Cubs are going to be that team that can make a little bit of noise. Do I think either of them are going to? Not really. I still think, like I said during my piece there, that the division winners and the Phillies are going to make their way through the rest of the it's like through to the next rounds of the playoffs. So
I don't know how much of a hot take this is, but Arizona, Chicago, Miami will win a combined 0 playoff games. Philly sweeps, Milwaukee sweeps. I don't think they're going to be much of a series. We saw Philly handle St. Louis last year. I know one of the games that there was a crazy ending with everyone on base, either a crazy comeback or a crazy like failed comeback. But you know, Philly's been there, done that. Milwaukee's been there, done that. Chicago hasn't, Arizona hasn't, Miami hasn't. So there's a class difference here. And I will put Philly in that class with both Atlanta and Los Angeles, and Milwaukee's kind of off in their own la-la land because they play in the Central. But I think it's a pretty clear talent gap. If, I don't know, if the Phillies all got COVID, then I think Arizona has a chance more than Chicago, more than Miami. You do have the two great arms. But one thing we do have to factor in is you have to spend the arms a little bit to make the playoffs. And if Arizona's in a do or die game 161, game 162, you might have to spend the bullets on Zach Gallen, Romero Kelly, whomever, to just make the playoffs. And that will heavily benefit a team like Milwaukee, a team like Philly that can, you know, take the next week and say, okay, we're going to just set up our rotation. Or like a team like Atlanta that has two of their starters on the IL right now and just saying, okay, we're going to, they can relax. Nothing crazy is going on here. While Arizona, Chicago, and of course the teams in the American League West are, you're probably having to use your big starters game 160, game 161, game 162.
Yeah, and I know I've said this about the American League race, but this is a situation where I think if you're fighting for a wild card spot, you kind of want the 6 seed more than the 5 seed, because you do not want to face the Phillies. I'm just going to say that. But I think the Brewers are kind of beatable because I'm not a huge fan of their lineup. I think it's kind of inconsistent. They don't score a ton of runs. Although I will say Mark Canna has been fantastic ever since that trade, which I'm very happy for that dude. But I will give the Cubs this, is that they do have some playoff veterans. You know, in addition to Cody Bellinger, I mean, Yan Gomes has been there before. He's been in the World Series. Dansby Swanson has been in the World Series too. He's been in the playoffs quite a bit. You know, Cody Bellinger, and then the pitching staff. I mean, Kyle Hendricks is still around from the 2016 team. Marcus Stroman has playoff experience. So does Drew Smyly and Jameson Taillon. The only one in the rotation who doesn't have playoff experience is Justin Steele. So I think because of their experience, I think the Cubs could at least make it to the NLDS. Do I think either of these teams could get past the Dodgers or the Braves or the Phillies? Probably not, but I will say I think the Cubs could at least make it to the NLDS. I think the D-backs, they're like a year ahead of schedule, kind of like the Reds, except they are a little more established. So I think the D-backs, it's just that they're not quite ready, in my opinion. Maybe next year they could make a deeper playoff run. So anyways, that's going to do it for our discussion on the playoff picture in both leagues. So now we are going to head to everyone's favorite segment of every show, which is trivia. And today we have Ryan Splash Potts to host that segment. So Splash, take it away.
Have you ever felt like you're in an endless cycle of doing podcasts every week?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we do. Me too. So I thought instead of getting out of the cycle, we're going to embrace the cycle, and I'm looking for players. Today's challenge is another guessing game. I'm looking for players who have hit for the cycle in the World Series. Now, quick thinkers in the audience will say, wait, no one's done that. You're right. The only playoff player to ever do that is Brock Holt. Obviously, it wasn't a World Series game because it was against the Yankees. But anyways, I have a list of players who have had a home run, a triple, a double, and a single in a World Series, in one continuous World Series, not across multiple. So, Mac, Alex, I would like you guys to name the players who have hit for the cycle over the course of a full World Series. There are a couple players who have done it in multiple World Series. If you happen to get one of those, you get 2 points instead of one. I don't know how well we're going to do with this. So it could be points. It could be strikes. We'll see how it goes. Let's say, Mac, you can go first because the Steelers made me some money this weekend.
All right. Man, this is going to be difficult. I think.
Yeah, you already lost me. I'm going to be honest with you.
Do you have any questions before you start guessing players?
No, it makes sense. So let me summarize it to make sure I got this right here. You have a stack of players in front of you that during one World Series during one World Series series hit a single, a double, a triple, and a home run, but not in the same game.
Correct. Yeah, no one's done it all in the same game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Let me. I'm gonna take a stab at this one. Roberto Clemente.
Roberto Clemente, 1971. Correct.
Ah, let's go.
Okay. Alex.
I don't know if this is right, but the first thing that came to my head, Chase Utley.
Chase Utley is incorrect.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Mac. All
right. So is that one strike?
We can go one strike, or that's one point for Max. Either way, or first to five, whatever you guys want to do.
All right. So, give me. Man, this is difficult.
Yeah.
Ian Kinsler.
Ian Kinsler is incorrect.
Ah,
Alex. Right.
It's a strike for me, I guess.
Honestly, I don't have a whole ton of great guesses. I'm going to go Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle in 1952 is correct.
Yay!
All right, wow, we're even. All right. I'm going to stick with the Yankees, I think. I'm going to go with Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio is incorrect.
Ah!
Alex.
Mm. Okay, so let's see here. Okay, I'm going to go. I know that this isn't. He isn't the biggest. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, here's one. Stan the Man Musial.
Stan the Man is incorrect.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Aye. We're both down to our last.
Max. We're all both already down to our last. We're about to go to sudden death real quick.
Okay.
If you both miss, we can do. I can change it up a little bit, so it's a little bit easier.
Okay.
All right, Mac.
I'm not sure if he did it, but Steve Pierce.
2018. World Series MVP Steve Pierce is incorrect.
Ah!
Okay, when you said a name, I thought you said that meant that he got it. I'm like, no way. okay, so here we go. Let's see. Did Mookie do it in 2020?
Marcus Lynn Betts is incorrect.
Dang, all right.
Okay, would we like to go to my... adjusted format, or would you like both like another guess?
I'll leave it up to you, because the way how I thought about it is that we keep basically going until one of us gets it right.
That works. You can do like soccer penalties. That's fine.
Yeah.
All right.
Mac.
Man, I got to do some thinking here. All right. I'm just trying to think of like who's played in the World Series too. That's the other thing.
That is a good qualifier.
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, my entire thought process is who's played in the World Series a lot. All right, go from there.
Yeah. Oh my God. Manny Ramirez.
Does Manny have a nickname?
Nope. Manny being Manny.
Okay. Yeah. Manny being Manny. Mac being wrong.
Okay.
That was a good one.
That caught me off guard.
Alex, your turn, buddy.
Shoot. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with the other name that kind of popped in my head. Ozzie Smith.
The Wizard. Ozzie Smith is incorrect. Mac, back to you.
I don't think Ozzie Smith hit home runs, really. That's the thing.
Well, that's my process, right? Is that a home run is easier to get than like a triple.
Yeah.
So it's like that's
kind of the other thing.
Yeah.
I'll go with another speedster though who hit a walk-off home run in the playoffs. Give me Scott Podsednik.
Scott Podsednik is incorrect.
Man. Yeah.
Going for another speed boy here. Go Lou Brock.
Alex, you got a double.
No way.
Yeah, Lou Brock did it in both 1967 and 1968.
No way.
I won a trivia!
Oh, my God.
Most recently done by Alcides Escobar. Notably, Mac, you'll remember this. He did not hit a ball out of the park.
I know.
Matt Holliday in 2013, David Freeze in 2011. Surprised you guys didn't get Freeze because he has a pretty famous triple.
Carlos Ruiz,
Johnny Damon, Scott Spezio, Jeter, Molitor, Milt Thompson, my guy, Devon White, Ricky, Gary Gaetti, Dave Henderson in 1986. Going to skip around a little bit. Brett, Garvey, Bench, Morgan, Evans, Reggie Jackson, Willie Horton, Zoloy Vorsalis, the GOAT,
AL MVP.
Tim McCarver, yes, the broadcaster, Elston Howard. It's actually two Yankees did it in that series they lost to the Pirates. Vic Wirtz, when Willie Mays turned into God in the 1954 World Series. Eno Slaughter, including his mad dash. Hank Greenberg did it twice. Lou Gehrig, Kai Kyler, Jimmy Fox. Irish Musial did it twice in the 20s, Babe Ruth in 1923, and the first guy, Larry Gardner in 1912 for the Boston.
I almost guessed Babe Ruth. I honestly was
thinking Babe Ruth too. Like,
yeah, you can't go wrong with guessing Yankees in a quiz about the World Series.
Yeah, that was again. Why do you think I guessed so many Cardinals?
Good point. Yeah.
We got a quote, Mantle. Sweet Victory playing in the background.
It's congratulations, sweet. Alex. Mac, get good.
Yeah, I'll try. I would have had it, but whatever.
Yeah, let's give props. Lou Brock did it in back-to-back World Series.
That's crazy, man. All right.
I want to say one thing for the viewers that are wondering why I'm popping off so much. I've won, I think, one trivia since we started doing trivia way before this baseball season even started. So the fact I finally win one, let's go.
It's like, congratulations on being the Philadelphia Phillies of trivia.
Damn. At least they made the World Series last year. So.
Okay. All right. Well. Thank you so much for that segment.
All the teams that made it to the playoffs last year from the NL East, it was definitely one of your guys' teams that made it.
Yeah, ha 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 ha. Anyway, thank you, Splash, for that, and I guess congrats, Alex, on your victory. We have reached our final segment of the show, which we end every episode with, which is the moment to ourselves. 60 seconds, give or take a few, to talk about whatever the heck you want to talk about, sports or not sports, or baseball or not baseball. So who here wants to go first? Splash, your time starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
So I've done this a couple times before, but I want to give a shout out to some players we may or may not talk about on the podcast. Julio Rodriguez, Bubba Thompson, Julio Rodriguez again. Thanks, Tops. Ji-Hwan Bae, Paul Goldschmidt, and Vladdy Guerrero. Austin Riley, Jaron Duran, Luis Guillorme, Lorenzo Cain, Shohei Ohtani, Colton Wong as a Mariner, Mark Canna as a Met, Luis Arraez as a Twin, Koei Arihara, Uniesil Diaz, Jorge Polanco, Garrett Cooper, an All-Star last year, by the way, Jorge Mateo, John Birdie, Mookie Betts, Leody Taveras, Jonathan India, Jorge Mateo, Aaron Judge, James Outman, Max Scherzer as a Met, David Hensley, Zach McKinstry, Stone Garrett as a Diamondback, Gunnar Henderson, Jordan Groshans, Ramon Laureano as an A, Ryan McMahon, Logan Ohapi, Jeff McNeil, who probably should win something for his defense, Logan Gilbert, Graham Ashcraft, and we will stop with a heritage Simeon Woods Richardson.
That's pretty good. That's a good collection of players, I think.
There are a lot of players we have talked about on the podcast.
Yes. There's another half. There's a couple nice ones. Like I have a nice Sandy Alcantara one and a nice Corbin Carroll one. The one that sparkles like this. Audio podcast.
Okay, those are really cool. I'm not gonna lie.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so, pretty. Sick.
Hopefully, I make lots and lots of money on these. JK, I'm probably not selling them, but it's always fun to open up some baseball cards.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I went to a Mets game earlier in the year where they gave away Topps baseball cards. Those used to be like my favorite giveaways every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Felix Hernandez day. A lot of times people know this, that the greeters will give away baseball cards to kids, all that. And one of my childhood friend of mine is now a greeter there. And he was one of my coaches back when I was in the Little League. And we saw him there. We started talking. And he just hands me a Felix Hernandez card. And I'm like, oh, let's go. So that was always nice.
All right, Alex, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. Let's do this.
All right, ready? Three, two, one.
So I'm going to immediately out myself probably as a bad person on this one, or not a bad person, but give a contrarian opinion. I prefer sparkling water over regular flat water. I love sparkling water. I will drink sparkling water all day over water any given opportunity that I can. And it was actually funny at work today. Like, I got bashed so hard for liking sparkling water, but I'll tell you this right now. Like, I love the taste of carbonation. That's just something that I've always loved. And on top of it, like, I've been trying to drink more water just in general, especially given my weights. I'm supposed to drink over 4.5 liters of water a day. And the fact that I've been able to get up to 3.5-4 liters by drinking carbonated water, by drinking sparkling water, and it's just a lot easier. It tastes better to me. I know that I'm definitely in the wrong here, but according to a lot of people, but I love it.
You know, my parents drink a lot of sparkling water, so I kind of get where you're coming from. I'm not a huge sparkling water fan, but I know you're definitely the only person who, you know, I use it to like dilute things. Like, you know, I drink cherry juice a lot as like a recovery thing. And so I tend to dilute that with seltzer water or something like that.
Oh yeah, so, no, it's got a lot of great uses to it. I just also like, one of my favorite things is putting that like with like a grape juice or something like that, and then you get like a sparkling version, which is really good. But I mean, like,
I could see that.
I just like, I love drinking LaCroix and stuff like that, and I know people say that it just tastes like angry water, but with the flavor coming from someone next door who's thinking really hard about a peach. But
accurate. Yeah, I could see it. It's good you're drinking water. If it wasn't water and let's say it was like a different beverage, then I might have more stronger opinions there, but water is great. You know, I drink a lot of water myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a good thing to do. Got to be healthy.
Yeah, you got to hydrate.
Got to hydrate. But yeah, no, yeah. Like, I got so much flack at work today from it. And I'm just like, really? It's not that bad. Like, it's good. I get my taste buds suck. But, like, they're not that bad.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of it like on its own, but I understand if you do drink it.
Welcome to Losses of a Replacement, the now sparkling water review podcast. I'm your host Alex Clark, joined by non-sparkling water drinkers Brian Splash Pop and Matthias Albuquerque.
I mean, sure.
How do you think I get my bubbly personality?
there you go. Exactly.
Exactly, 100%. All right, let's end the podcast. Right. Let's get to the outro.
Exactly. All right, I'm going to get started in 3, 2, 1. So, I don't know. Alex has been kind of inspired me because I got to say this. If you get through your day without drinking coffee or some type of caffeine, I'm asking you honestly, how the heck are you functioning right now? Because I've noticed this over the year. Maybe it's because I started working full time, but I've already was super dependent on caffeine and on coffee, but now my craze or like my reliance on it has probably doubled or tripled this year. I now drink at least 2 cups of coffee a day. But I will say, the myth that it stunts your growth is a lie. My dad started drinking coffee regularly when he was about 8 years old and he's 6 feet tall. So don't listen to that. But I realized also that I just enjoy the taste of coffee. So for those coffee non-enjoyers out there, I'm not saying you need to get hooked on it the way I do, but I would give it a shot, you know. So anyway, that was our moment to ourselves. I don't know. Do you guys drink coffee or is it just me?
I don't drink coffee, but I do have other caffeines that I do take. Like, I take a pre-workout that's
got caffeine. Okay, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I like that, but I can't drink coffee itself.
Yeah, the only caffeine that I have is some Crystal Light from time to time. The grape ones are caffeinated a little bit. The lemonade ones I usually get
two packs of each, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's about 50-50. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, the protein drinks that I get or that I have after I work out normally have some caffeine in it too.
I think it's just a good way to go about it. Like, I mean, one of the last times I actually drank coffee, my body shut down on me. That's why I had to be a little careful. I feel like taking like other drinks that are caffeinated work just better for me.
Yeah. So now for all our listeners, you know that I run on caffeine. I don't necessarily run on Dunkin', I'll tell you that much.
I was about to make a run. Mac runs on Dunkin'.
I used to run on Dunkin' when I was in grad school and when I was in college, but okay. Maybe this is me being the spoiled New Yorker, but I live in New York. I don't need to necessarily go to Dunkin' or Starbucks.
I'm in Seattle. I don't go to Starbucks. I don't go to Starbucks very much. Seriously? I'm a Seattleite. Yeah, no. Wow. I mean, I don't have much of a... I mean, I just said also I don't drink coffee.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Now, like I said, you guys know what our preferred beverages are during the day. Sparkling water, coffee, Crystal Light, everything.
I mean, if you give me a caffeinated beverage, go Ghost, either the cherry limeade or the orange cream. Those are two top tier flavors.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever... Yeah, I've never had Ghost, but I've seen it in the grocery stores before.
It's good stuff. Zero sugar, all that fun stuff, so it's pretty good.
Yeah. So anyways, thank you all for listening. As you've seen, we're not necessarily talking about baseball right now, but trust me, you're getting plenty of baseball over these next few weeks as the postseason will begin. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it begins on Tuesday. So... look out for that. Whether or not your team is in the playoffs, I'm sure you will be watching. I know it feels like I know people who are like, oh God, I'm not watching the playoffs at all. You know, my team's not in. And then you end up watching like every game. And it's like, well, what are you going to tell me now? But anyway, make sure to let us know what you think will happen over this last week of the season. What do you think will happen in the World Series? Tell us at LAR_baseball. Make sure to go follow up that handle on Twitter. Make sure to follow all of us on Twitter at thesportsguy242 for Alex. Follow Splash at MrSplashman19 and follow myself at Matthias_A_K. But for everyone at Losses Above Replacement, thank you all for listening and hope to see you all real soon. Thank you.